and welcome to Radio Gorepress. I am Rosie, and with me is my co-host Phil.
Hello.
Hi, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. I've had a pretty good day.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, and all said and done.
Fair enough.
Been testing,
but we had salted donuts. Salted caramel donuts.
Salted caramel donuts.
That sounds horrendous.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Well, this salted, is off to a great start.
Salted caramel donuts sound much more appealing.
Yeah.
They were
awesome. We've got some bad news you might have seen on our Instagram, but Sarah is not with us this week. She is poorly.
She has the lurg.
The dreaded lurg. She is dying at home currently.
I mean, not dying.
You never know.
I mean, I guess we're all dying, really.
Oh, wow. Deep.
Yeah.
Phil, this is meant to be an upbeat show. So yet again, we've had to put our planned film on hold, and we asked you guys on Instagram whether you thought we should do a sci-fi horror or a spooky ghosty film, and of course
spooky ghosty film lost, because no one wants to see me happy.
Nobody wants to see Phil happy ever, and everybody wants to see me happy, which is brilliant, because I love sci-fi. So we picked a film that actually we checked out for the first time last week. We were having a bit of a Netflix evening, and we came across it and thought, that sounds pretty interesting. That's got a pretty good synopsis on Netflix, which is strange for Netflix.
They're usually terrible, aren't they?
They're so bad. So we thought we'd give it a shot, and it was released in 2015. It is a Mexican film. Mm-hmm. It is Mexican. I looked that up. And it is called The Similars, or Los Parecidos.
Mm. Like the pronunciation.
Thank you.
You were waiting for me to comment on that, weren't you?
I practiced.
Is that what you were doing when you're outside having a smoke?
Yeah. Los Parecidos. La la la. It's directed by a guy called Isaac Esban, who hasn't actually done an awful lot of stuff. His other film that people might have seen came out in 2014, and that was called The Incident, which we've actually just finished watching, haven't we? Which has similar kind of vibes in terms of the storyline, but
definitely.
It turns out that there's like a kind of mythology that links the two films together anyway, but obviously we'll get onto that in a bit. So I guess to start off with, overall, Phil, did you enjoy the film?
Yes.
Was that a stupid
Straight
question?
Out there, yes. Yeah, I loved it. I mean, we'll go into further why, but I wasn't sure what to expect.
Yeah.
I mean, it took so many different kind of twists and turns, both plot-wise and also, like, thematically and tonally.
Yeah, definitely.
It was just a weird one to watch, but the more that more happened, the more I loved it.
It's it goes straight beyond ridiculous back into brilliant again, I think. The synopsis on IMDb, because obviously we don't have the DVD of it, says, on a rainy night of October 2nd, 1968, eight characters waiting on a remote bus station for a bus headed to Mexico City start experiencing a strange phenomenon.
Ooh.
Yeah. Spooky. And I kind of feel like that's all you can really say about the actual plot without giving away some, like, key twists and points.
Yeah. Well, it relies on the what the fuckness of it.
There is a lot of what the fuckness.
If you were to describe what was to happen, then the whole thing would just be ruined because you'd know what was coming.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. I feel like it is real out-of-the-box directing as well in terms of the storyline, and even in this sort of day and age, like for a film that's been filmed in 2015 to be set in 1968, I mean, they got round it by filtering the absolute fuck out of the film.
Yeah.
And that was a definite stylistic choice on their part.
Yeah, it looked very noir, which I know is more.
But this is it, like
40s.
But it had this really wonderful quality to it, which I haven't seen in many other films at all, especially not recent films where it did have that noir vibe and it had a very sort of retro stylized look to it. And it was really reminiscent of shows like The Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits.
You sort of mentioned how it was like a bit of a new out-the-box form of directing, but I think it's weird. I was about to say it's weird because it feels out-the-box because that sort of style of storytelling has kind of not fallen out of favour, but it's not quite as popular these days.
Interesting you should say that, Philip Tavener.
Interesting.
whilst I was doing a little bit of research on the film, there are a lot of people, I can't remember his name, he does a lot of reviews for Variety magazine. He reviewed this film and said that it was really reminiscent of a very specific Twilight Zone, which was called It's a Good Life.
Okay.
So,
which I presume if you've seen, you will understand what's going to happen in this film.
There are so many similarities between the two. Yeah, if you've seen It's a Good Life, then this is kind of a rehash, but set in a bus depot. Whereas It's a Good Life is effectively a story set in an isolated village.
Okay.
And again, you can't say too much about it because it gives away the story, which is really annoying. But if anything, that should make you guys want to go and watch it more.
Yeah,
which
I mean, it's
going
to make our job next to impossible to talk for the next 55 minutes.
It'll be fine. It will be fine. So obviously the film it's completely set in some rooms, but in a bus depot. You never see outside. You never... there's a kind of idea that you know where they're going, but you have no idea where they are. So you know they're all traveling to Mexico City, but you have absolutely no idea where they're traveling from. So this depot could literally be
anywhere.
Yeah. And there's a real kind of disparity, and there's a real idea of otherworldliness that they've entered into this place that...
I mean, it's kind of like Limbo, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of weird purgatory.
Yeah.
That they can't leave.
Mm.
For most of the film, they can't leave because of the prohibitive weather, because, the rain's just too bad. Mm. And then as the film gets further on and more ridiculous, actually, they can't leave because they can't open the doors or the windows and... nothing is following any kind of strict laws of physics or reality. Which adds to the what-the-fuckness of this film.
Yep.
There are some very... I think bizarre is a really good word to use.
Yeah, I think you're right.
It's fucking bizarre.
In the best way, though. It all kind of makes sense.
I guess.
Yeah,
I know what you mean.
If you can suspend disbelief that the events as prescribed in the film are happening, then it makes sense. Why it all unfolds the way it does makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. There's what is it? Is there 8 characters in this film?
Thereabouts.
So you've got the station master.
Yep.
Who's called Martin.
Mm-hmm.
The
Ulysses.
Mining employee, Ulysses, yeah.
Irene,
who is a pregnant lady who is running away from her abusive husband.
Mm-hmm.
There is a university student called Alvaro.
Mm-hmm.
An upper-class lady... and that's basically all you get out of it, called Gertrudis. And her...
is she with child? Well, has a
child.
She
has a child.
She is with a child rather than with child.
She is literally with child. And the child is called Ignacio. Ignacio?
Yes, I think that's right.
Ignacio?
Steve. Ignatius.
Ignatius. Ignoramus. And a toilet attendant who just lives in the toilets.
Yeah, it seems to be, doesn't it?
Like
that's just where she is.
They tell her to come out. She's like, oh, no.
I can't.
Why no?
I couldn't possibly.
but this is where I live. In the toilets. And is there a police detective? Am I misremembering?
No.
Because I looked this up and they were like, oh yeah, the police detective Reyes, who's in the bus depot. And I was like, I don't remember that. I don't remember that at all. But
good
it's
question.
Not unlike me to not remember something. So I thought I would leave it up to you to decide.
Like the name Reyes is
recording.
Familiar.
It's because it's the name of Reaper in Overwatch.
And not just for that reason.
Because that's all you ever think about, Phil. Wearing your Overwatch hat as you are right now.
They wouldn't have known had you not told them.
No, but I had to. There's an interesting historical point to this film as well. What with it being filmed in 1968, it was noted that on the radio, there's a radio in the station master's office that keeps crackling in and out of reception and giving different snippets of news stories. And at one point they say that there is chaos in the streets, and that's a direct reference to the government versus
students, wasn't it?
Yeah, but kind of like government versus anti-government, if you know what I mean. At the Tlatelolco massacre, which happened in 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some interesting sort of like historical referencing going on in there from a modern film looking back at a previous time, which I thought was a really neat touch because it kind of grounds it in reality a little bit more because that was something that actually happened. Mm. And I find that that grounding in reality when something is so up in the air, weird going on, kind of makes it a little bit more scary.
It gives it more purpose, doesn't it?
Yeah. It pays itself a little bit of
it's not
service,
just this
which
is weird, it's this is weird, but there's a reason this is weird.
Yeah.
Like, it's
There's that idea that, like, because you can link it to a thing that's happened in actual real life, it kind of makes it more plausible and more real.
Mm.
Which is fucking ridiculous for this film.
Says a lot, really.
I mean, I guess we were kind of pushing the envelope a little bit when we said it was like a horror. It is a horror.
Yeah, well,
it's,
I mean,
like,
if it's
those B movie horror.
If it's kind of nodding to Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits and all that, then yeah, I think that's firmly in the horror category.
Are you sticking by that?
What?
That it's firmly in the horror category.
Yes. I'm suddenly questioning my opinions now. You're asking me.
No,
that.
No, it was
a
genuine
question. I
feel
like you're about to follow it up with like, then why do you think this? Then
no,
my opinions have been shattered all over the floor.
No, I was genuinely interested.
Yeah, I think so. Like, particularly the ending of it, because that firmly is horror territory.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, if you imagine the significance of what's going on, so we've made the conscious decision, in case you haven't noticed, to avoid spoilers. In an interesting turn of events, avoid spoiling this movie as much as possible. Because
we really want people to watch it.
Because it's so much fun. So much fun to kind of watch the whole film develop. But it makes it really hard to talk about it.
Because there's not actually an awful lot of plot line apart from the twists and turns of the story.
Yeah.
It's balls to the wall mental. There's a crazy Spanish-speaking... No, is she Spanish?
No, I think she's... I think I kind of assumed she was, like, Native American.
Yes.
Because obviously she was speaking a language they couldn't understand.
Yeah, because they're speaking Spanish, aren't they? Obviously.
I wasn't going to say anything. This is set in Mexico, after all.
Yeah, but she's speaking a language that, yeah, they don't fucking understand. And she's just sitting in the corner.
Kind of a shamanistic Native American.
Going a bit loopy.
Yeah.
Like, she is clearly terrified of something.
Mm.
And her character kind of is really out there in the corner, like, not really doing anything. And then towards the second half of the film, like, she really comes into her own.
Yeah.
And I kind of love her. I love all the characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not actually sure there's a character that I don't like in this film.
Which says a lot, I think.
Yeah. I'm so excited for people to watch that. I can't get over it. I mean, one thing that... I know we're jumping around a bit whilst we're, like, talking about the film and different things to say, but it's so difficult to not stumble across a spoiler to it.
A lot of time we do what we usually do, obviously, if you're a regular listener, is we take it chronologically as the film progresses and then naturally kind of interject with points
as
we're going.
Pick up on points as we're going along.
Because we're...
But it's not so easy.
It's a bit more difficult here.
Mm. One thing that I really loved, and I don't know whether it was a product of the filtering over the film or whether it was the kind of choreographed long shots, or a lot of people have actually compared the style of the film to Hitchcock.
Mm.
Can you see that?
Yeah, well, like, it's very character driven, very, like you say, a lot of long shots, a lot of kind of tension building.
Mm.
Yeah, I see that.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
I think it's a very bold statement to make.
Mm.
And
says a lot about the director as well, if he can pull off a Hitchcockian...
But this is it. I don't think it's necessarily untrue or unwarranted. Like, I think he is a very, very talented man. And actually, that was what led us to watch The Incident, the fact that we were so taken with similars that we were like, yes.
Well, looking at the plot synopsis of The Incident, it again had a very sort of Twilight Zone-y feel. Both are kind of weird because they're not... They're kind of explorations of characters in bizarre circumstances.
Mm.
Rather than having a developing plot, they're very insular films.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that has something to do with budgetary constraints, but they're not...
I don't actually know if there is a listed budget on this film.
Haven't seen it, but feel free to take a look. But yeah, they have this very insular feel because they're about characters reacting to being... It's like you said when we were watching it, it could be a play.
Yeah, like absolutely. That was kind of the point that I was leading up to next.
Okay.
No.
But it goes to show that the type of movie it is.
It's dressed up like a set, and there are, from memory, almost no close-up shots.
I didn't pick up on that. But...
All of them, again, from memory, but all of them tend to be long shots, or they are shots with 1, 2, 3 people.
Yeah, mid shots.
With the entire surroundings around them. You also find in this film that there's very little blocking of characters, so you'll never have characters standing in front of each other in the camera line.
Mm.
And it's very rare for anyone's back to be turned, either.
Yeah.
So...
It feels like they're all facing the audience, as it were.
It ticks all of these boxes for it to be a play.
Yeah.
And in fact, I can see it working really well as a play as well. Like, I can totally imagine it. And I think that's testament to the sort of rules of theatre that they've... clearly followed in order to produce this modern film which looks and acts like it's set in the past.
Mm.
And I think that's great.
Yeah, definitely. Didn't pick up on that.
I think it's worth a rewatch, actually.
I actually was thinking that we should rewatch it soon.
Sorry, guys. That's it. We're stopping the podcast now. We're going to go and rewatch this film. Sorry. It scored remarkably well on Rotten Tomatoes. It hit a solid 95%.
95. I know I have issues with Rotten Tomatoes, but I mean, no, fuck it, I'm going to say. So, like, I understand it has its kind of benefits, but it's such a flawed way of looking at it.
Because, how so?
Well, like, the way it works is either a film's fresh or rotten, right?
Right.
So
fresh.
So theoretically, a film could get 10, 10 6 out of 10s.
Right.
And be declared 100% fresh, right? Because...
Can it?
I think that's how it works. It's either classified good or bad. And then the percentage is how many people voted it good.
Who the fuck thought of that?
Right? I think that's how it works. So you could have one film that got 9 out of 10s and 1 out of 10 that would therefore get a 90% fresh, but then another film that has 10 6 out of 10s and that would give it 100%. So the one that got 6 out of 10 across the board would seemingly be better.
That seems so backwards.
Are you sure? I think so. Like, they have, underneath, they have the actual average rating.
That's insane. So, no, I don't agree with that at all.
So, Halloween, the new Halloween movie.
Yeah. Which I'm very excited
87%
about.
Fresh. But the average rating is 7.2 out of 10.
So 87% of people have said that
means
it's
like
good.
87 out of 100 people have said, yeah, that's good. But between them, they've given an average of 7.2 out of 10.
So 13% of people have said that the new Halloween shit
is like, presumably like 4 out of 10 or less. Or 4 or 5 out of 10.
Fuck those guys.
But yeah, it's such a flawed way of looking at it because it's so binary.
Yeah.
It's either good or bad. Doesn't really account for... nuance.
Okay, well, we don't like Rotten Tomatoes then. Decided, don't we? On IMDb, it got 5.9 out of 10.
Huh.
Which is a little disappointing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you always find horror on IMDb tends to sort of edge lower than other films.
That's based on 2,592 votes.
Hmm. Well, fuck those people that gave it a low rating.
Right! How dare they? That was what I wanted to find out. I wanted to find out if Martin, the station master, had been in anything else. And it turns out he has. One of which is a film called Get the Gringo.
Okay.
Oh, he was also in The Mask of Zorro, though.
Amazing.
God, I have no idea who he played. And it's going to be hell finding out while still talking.
I think you've dug your grave now. You need to lie in
it. I have. I'm so sorry, you guys.
I'm not filling the time for you, Rosie.
Philip!
I'm not filling the time.
You're not Philipping the time.
God damn it.
Oh, God, he's been in loads of stuff. None of it looks very interesting. Oh, what have I done? I really have created Rod for my own back with this, haven't I? He's been in about 140 different films.
Wow.
He is a prolific man. And a TV series called Fierce Angel. Wow. No, can't find it. No, I give up. I don't care.
What were you looking for?
Oh, I just saw it. No, I don't care. It's gone. It's done. I wanted to know who he played in The Legend of Zorro.
Oh, okay.
You could Sorry, the Mask of Zorro.
Could just look up Mask of Zorro.
You know,
I
could. But look at where we are now. Why are you laughing at me?
We've got to fill this hour some way or another.
I don't think we're going to go. I do happen to have a user review, which we'll get to later, though.
Interesting.
You've earmarked that one. Oh, my goodness. So I feel like what we should do, as we can't give a running synopsis of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, there are 8 people in a bus depot. Weird shit starts happening.
Yep.
All is explained. I feel like what we should do is we should actually kind of wrap up this segment because there's not really a lot more we can say about it.
Mm-hmm.
Give our out of 10s, give our user reviews, just talk about what we thought about the film in general. And then we should do a little bit about the kind of stuff that we've been watching at the moment, because I feel like we've watched some really interesting stuff recently.
Okay, I'm down with that. I was actually trying to work out if we were going to do that from the start, but
we could have done
straight ahead.
But that's
straight ahead. That's fair. So eager to talk about The Similars.
I'm just not used to Sarah not being
here. We're just a mess. We're just a mess without you, Sarah.
This is a costume of a podcast, Sarah. And I'm an absolute fucking yogurt. So, there you go.
What did you think of the stylistic choices they made? Particularly the kind of filtering.
The filtering was an interesting one because...
For the record, because obviously filtering is such an ambiguous term, it's nearly monochrome. There's a hint of colour.
Yeah.
But it's very desaturated. Very, very muted.
Yeah. And it's... the film quality is still actually very good.
Mm. There is a simulation of like film grain on it, so it gives
but
it a
there
bit
is
a
grain
of a,
filter, yeah.
Bit of a kind of an actual film,
yeah,
rather than digital film,
yes,
vibe to it.
I didn't mind the filter because it stayed and created that suspension of disbelief, that idea that like what was happening within the confines of that bus depot wasn't based in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else happening outside might well have been, but like in that best bus depot at that moment where there was some weird shit going on, everything seemed hyper realistic, which is really interestingly done considering like it wasn't oversaturated or high contrast or anything. Like it was actually quite relatively muted contrast, and these just like beautiful long shots and stuff. So I feel like the filtering added to it in the way that it made it feel more ethereal and otherworldly, kind of.
Yeah.
But right at the beginning, when you don't know kind of what's happening, it is a little bit jarring, and it takes a while to get your head around.
Yeah, I almost forgot it was set in the 60s, because I know it does open, I think, with a title card saying, 1962?
Eight?
Yeah. Okay. But because it starts off with, like, from memory, it starts off with, like, shots of these objects on desks, like a sort of a camera panning over desks, with just the objects on the desk, and then this kind of black and white filter over it and a voiceover. It is just so noir. It's so noir.
And like really interesting light being used and like bright shafts of light coming through windows and the guy smoking. So there is Martin's like smoking a cigarette. So there's like smoke curling up by his face while he's like...
I mean, he's not like in a suit and, you know, fedora or anything.
But... No, he's dressed like a station master. He's dressed like an old man.
But it's very easy to forget that it is set in more contemporary times.
Yeah.
But I think also the...
Because you do just want one of them to be like, you never take me alive, Kappa!
It feels... as if it is a bit of a nod to the kind of those sort of horror TV shows from the 60s. Because they would have appeared in black and white as well.
Oh yeah, of course.
I feel. I think it helped ground it in that kind of world. I think with the plot line, it being what it is, it benefits from that vibe.
Yeah, I would say so.
I don't know. I can't imagine what it would be like without, if it was filmed normally. You almost wonder whether it would get... It would feel too hokey.
Yeah, I think it would feel too ridiculous.
Yeah. But because it's kind of, as you say, situated in this kind of otherworldly, ethereal limbo. Because they're in this one location and weird stuff's going down and it's all very black and white, muted and everything. It just kind of works together.
Yeah. Yeah, it marries really well. Yeah. No, good point.
Yeah.
Neat. Should we, well, overall, I thought, obviously, it's no news to anyone that I thought it was great. I thought it was really engaging. I thought it was totally immersive. Like, there wasn't any point at which I was tempted to turn my attention to anything else or, like, check my phone or anything like that. And I'm not saying that I do that with lots of films because that's a terrible thing to do. You should never do that.
Sorry, Sarah.
But... It was totally engaging, like, utterly ridiculous, supremely funny, and not because it was necessarily... It's really difficult to explain. Like, obviously it was written to be funny, but it wasn't written to be a comedy. But it's just so... absolutely out of the realms of possibility that you kind of can't help but laugh at it. I love that. I absolutely love that.
I think, like, the thing that always that got me was how, like you say, it's flat out funny. Like, you look at it and you think that's hilarious, but the next moment something's happened and the tension has just skyrocketed and you suddenly forget how ridiculous the situation is because it's so...
And it becomes genuinely kind of terrifying.
Yeah, because the filmmaking itself is so good that you just get immersed in it.
Mm.
You get immersed in what the characters are going through. And I think that's really, like, a really amazing feat.
Well done, Isaac Asban. Well done. Good for you.
So, out of 10?
I would give it a solid... 5 out of 7. I would give it a pretty solid 8. Like, I am looking forward to watching it again and I would absolutely recommend it to everybody to watch it.
Okay.
And I just hiccuped. I'm so sorry.
And you were the one scolding me for potentially burping all over the podcast. And here I am, half an hour in, haven't burped once.
I'm so proud of you. Words cannot explain. Please don't.
I promise I won't.
You can't promise that.
I'll let you know in half an hour, I guess. We'll find out. I agree with everything you've kind of said. It's just such a fun movie to watch. Just because it is the tone, you feel like... You feel basically kind of in, what's his name? The director?
Isaac Asban.
Isaac. I was thinking, is his name Oscar or Isaac? Isaac's kind of hands. You're always in his hands. You're feeling what he wants you to feel.
It's very, you feel very malleable when you're watching films like this, don't you?
Yeah, because... Like when he wants it to be tense, it gets tense.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But then there are parts which are just laugh out loud funny.
Mm.
Like, not even, that's amusing. But, like,
yeah.
Laughing out loud funny.
Just the realisation of what's going on.
Yeah. Watch it.
So, yeah, I would agree with your 8 out of 10.
Would you?
Yeah.
Oh, good going.
Yeah. No, I loved it. Right. More than happy to watch it again.
We have got... It's not my favourite user review that I've ever read, but it is one of the only 1 out of 10s on IMDb.
1 out of 10.
Because there's always one.
Andrew Hutton 89, if that is your real name. Mm-hmm. The title is Stop Comparing This to Hitchcock.
Oops. Sorry.
Sars Andrew Hutton 89. This is absolute garbage. I just finished watching this movie and it is the worst thing I have ever seen, leaving a bad taste in my mouth and wishing I could wash my eyes out. Alright.
I mean,
bit dramatic.
Would you not wash your mouth out if you had a bad taste in your mouth? Like,
maybe he talks out of his eyes.
Maybe.
Maybe he has mouth spot eyes.
Maybe he eats with his eyes. No. I'm very confused.
Does he cry with his mouth?
I don't know, but the cure is... Blah, blah, blah.
The curly?
The cure, curly. Surely. Clearly. Ignore me. Just carry on.
Curly! It looks like the most obnoxious student film with zero motivation and no substance. The spoiler is pretty laughable. I genuinely laughed. He gave it a 1 out of 10 and he genuinely laughed at a film. Come on. But it's enjoyable for about 15 seconds until you realise that the movie is just this stupid. Everything looks cheap and tacky. I'm guessing it had a small budget, but Jesus Christ. The grainy cigarette burn Kelvin Insta filter. Rude. Fucking rude. Gets annoying very quickly. I watched this because people were comparing it to Hitchcock. Within 5 minutes, I realised people are stupid. Watch this movie if you want to be robbed of life. Finn.
Oh God, he ended it with Finn.
He ended it with Finn. And 1 out of 4 found this helpful.
That's still too many in my opinion.
What? The Andrew Hutton 99 found that helpful, didn't he? He's the 1 out of 4.
And 3 other people have said nope.
Do you find that really weird how... I get that, like, not everybody can like everything.
Yeah.
I get that. But I always find it so strange how you can have a film that, like, so many people love. Like, the reviews on here are, like, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. It's excellent, it's brilliant, you should absolutely watch it. And there'll always be one who thinks it is, and I quote... the worst thing I've ever seen.
Clearly hasn't seen many films then.
Right? He's never seen Avatar The Last Airbender.
Oh God. Why would you remind me of that?
He's never seen Dear God No.
Knock knock.
Knock knock. Oh my God. That made me want to wash my mouth and eyes out. That I talked and cried out of. Stop comparing this to Hitchcock.
I think... no. Maybe that comes down to, like, him... Because I think we... So we had this... I can't remember what film it was. But we had a film that we podcasted, like, about years ago.
Mm.
And...
Was it Extra?
I don't believe so. I don't I can't remember whether I've watched that or not.
No, we have.
You might have. I'm not sure. I don't know.
We did a podcast on it.
Okay. But basically we watched it and we're like, how is this a film? This is terrible. And it was because we'd gone in with the wrong expectations. We'd actually, what was meant to be deliberately funny, we thought was crap. Whereas had we realised that it was meant to be deliberately funny, we would have enjoyed it a lot more.
I cannot remember what that film is.
I can't either. I feel that might be the same there. Like, he kind of derides it for being funny, whereas we're going, it's great, it was really funny. Like, I think had he known it was a conscious decision to be funny, then maybe he wouldn't have given it that 1 out of 10.
Maybe. And then I guess what you find funny is very, very subjective.
That is true. But this is funny.
But I mean, you know, if you don't think this is funny, then you're a fucking idiot. Just putting that out there. Like, there is no way in which this film is not utterly hilarious. So, I mean, I guess that kind of wraps it up for our first segment for the actual film that we did a watch of. So... Yeah.
So, yeah.
Thanks for filling the dead space in there, Phil.
I was expecting you to carry on. It felt like you were introducing the next section.
I feel like that's what I'm doing now anyway.
So what have you watched recently, Rosie?
What have I watched recently? Well, yes, thank you very, very much. I caught Hold the Dark, mm-hmm. which is a Netflix special that is out at the moment. Really interesting. Really interesting. Super intense. Very surreal. Very dark. Hold the Dark. Has it got the guy from Westworld in it?
I don't know.
Was that the guy? Is that where I recognise him from?
I'm going to look that up now. Because I don't know.
Okay. But yeah, Netflix special. It only came out like a couple of days, about a week or two ago, maybe. Like, it hasn't been out long, but it's about a woman whose child is taken wolves, and contacts the writer of a book who has hunted and killed wolves to get him to come and hunt down and kill the wolf that took her son. Because she says that her husband is coming back from the war soon and she needs to have something to show him. So this guy turns up and all is not as it seems. Discoveries made and yeah. Like, it all goes to a very kind of weird and tumultuous dark place. Like I said, really interesting. And I kind of got to the end of it and I was a little bit like, eh, what just happened?
Mm.
Eh? But I had a conversation with the law about...
with the police.
With the law.
With Johnny Law.
With Johnny Law. With Sarah Law. Had a conversation with Sarah about it and she was like, oh, but... you know why all of that seemed so strange, didn't you? And then told me, and I was like, oh, I feel like a fucking idiot now. Because I missed out, like, a massive, glaring plot twist, which apparently was, like, designed to be ambiguous.
Okay, in
my defense. Actually, it's the film is based on a book, which, fuck it, I don't care about spoilers anymore. Which
we've been holding their spoilers for 40 minutes now.
Yeah, and I'm done. Spoiler alert. makes no bones about the fact that the husband and wife are in fact twins. Like, it's never necessarily outwardly talked about in the show, but it's definitely alluded to in various ways and points, but it was something that I'd actually kind of just not made the link with when I was watching it. And so when Sarah was like, but you know they're twins, right? I was like, I'm sorry, what the fuck? And then she did a little facepalm emoji and I got cross. Don't you facepalm me, Sarah Law? But yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was good. I thought that it was definitely worth a watch. I'm not entirely sure if I'd be like, hey guys, check out this awesome thing on Netflix. Though, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
Yeah, I felt the same way. Like, it was a bit of a, I think I need to rewatch it because I think that kind of conversation between you and Sarah happened when I was asleep or otherwise engaged or something. So
when I was asleep.
I didn't really have the kind of epiphany that you had. So I think I need to kind of rewatch it with that in mind. And I think I would, again, appreciate it more.
Yeah, for sure.
It does benefit from a proper think. But what it reminded me of is a show called Fortitude.
I haven't seen Fortitude, but I have heard
it's really good. It's kind of the same sort of vibe. So it's set in a kind of a remote Arctic settlement.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of a bit of a science researchy place. There are a lot of kind of different nationalities there. There's some like Norwegian people, some English people, whatever. And a I believe a detective arrives on the scene to invest. Because it's so small, it's...
Is it a gumshoe with a bum ticker?
Yes. Because it's such a small community, like, it's super peaceful because everyone knows each other. No one wants to fuck each other over.
Yeah.
But a kind of a grisly murder occurs. So this detective flies in to try and investigate. And you kind of realise that things aren't as they seem, and there's a lot more underneath the surface that is perhaps obvious.
Yeah.
But yes, it reminded me kind of a lot of that. Not in the kind of specifics of the storyline, but just the feel of it, the remote Arctic kind of settlement.
It feels very barren, doesn't it?
Yeah. The kind of mysterious thing occurring in this kind of remote Arctic or sort of snowy landscape, because it's set in Alaska, isn't it? Holy duck.
Yes, it is.
But yeah, it's got, Fortitude has a great cast as well. So it's got Stanley Tucci, Michael Gambon, it's got
awesome.
Dennis Quaid, awesome. Richard Dormer.
Awesome.
Most of those I remember, but some I'm looking up. Christopher Eccleston's in it.
Oh.
Luke Treadaway, who I think...
I don't know who that is.
He's either the guy who was in Penny Dreadful,
I've
or
never
the
seen that.
Brother of the guy who was in Penny Dreadful.
I haven't seen him either.
It's good. but yeah, it's really good. And it reminded me sort of tonally of that.
Okay. So that's worth checking out then.
Yeah.
Bit of Fortitude.
Mm, definitely.
I was going to say Platform. Is that the thing that you said?
So it was on Now TV. I don't think it is anymore.
So I'm fucked then.
So maybe you won't be able to watch it, but it's worth keeping an eye out for.
So I saw this really good thing and I think you'd really like it, but you can't watch it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly that.
Thanks, mate.
You are welcome.
You got me all excited.
I'm looking it up now, don't worry. I rewatched, and it's a bit of an old one, but Dead Silence.
Dead Silence.
Have you seen that before?
No, I don't think so, actually.
So, it's a James Wan film.
Yeah.
And I love a bit of James Wan. I really enjoy his...
Which bit?
Nice. All of him. I really enjoy his style of horror. I mean, less so kind of the Saw aspect, but The Conjuring and Dead Silence and Insidious and all those films.
Very up
like,
your alley.
They're kind of this kind of whole like spooky haunted house, like really traditional, almost back to basics haunted house movies.
Mm.
A lot of like clanging around in the dark and like things moving
around.
That's
just James Wan.
But Dead Silence, it's kind of really hokey, but in the best way, it feels like a campfire ghost story.
Okay, I'll
say. So it's about a couple who are living their life and having fun. All of a sudden, they receive a delivery of a ventriloquist's dummy.
Ow. No!
I mean, James Wan loves dolls. That's no secret. Annabelle. Billy from Saw. It was Billy, wasn't it? Whatever the
real dolls.
Yeah.
What?
Nothing. and he gets sort of drawn back to his childhood home because his girlfriend gets murdered in the opening scene, and during his investigations he gets drawn back to his childhood home, which is something like it has some amazing name called Raven's Branch
Ravens.
Or something.
Is it just called Raven?
Raven. No, it's. I'm looking it up now. Raven's Fair. There we go.
Raven's Fair.
Yeah.
My friend changed her last name to Ravenswood.
That's cool.
That was pretty cool. I mean, it was cool at the time, and now looking back at it, I'm like, that is like
the nerdiest thing.
Edgelord as fuck.
But yeah, I think it kind of got a bit of mixed opinions. I mean, it's got 20% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I know we've just slated. 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb. But the actual, like, the way the story develops, the kind of set piece is there's like a theatre set on a lake. And it just all seems kind of... What? Like, not like in a lake, but on an island in the middle of a lake.
It's just a theatre set on a lake.
It kind of feels super... Like I said, a campfire ghost story type thing where it's not really... It's kind of not really realistic, but just works because of the whole tone of the film.
Yeah.
And again, there's a kind of the climax of the film again just feeds into the whole campfire ghost story thing. But it kind of gets a bad rep, but I really love it. I really enjoy that film.
So you rewatched it for like the bazillionth time?
Maybe third, fourth time.
How many films are you up to with your...
For those of you who don't know, I have set myself a less and less private challenge the longer the year goes on to try and watch basically as many films as there are days in the year. So not one a day. I'm not going to watch one a day because that is ridiculous, but I will try and watch, by the end of the year, I'll try to have watched 365 films. And I am up to 281.
That's just disgusting.
I am counting films I've watched more than once because I think it's really unfair to watch to not.
So are you counting films that you've just got on in the background as well?
Yeah. Well, not like I'm not that I am paying attention to, but generally, if I've got it on the background, I've seen it already.
Okay.
So I've watched 272 unique films.
Unique films?
As in not... As in films I haven't seen before. So there are like 8 films that I've rewatched, including Shape of Water.
Fishboner.
Which we watched the other day.
Oh my god, it was so good!
I'm really glad you enjoyed
it. It was so good, and it really reminded me of Pushing Daisies, and I like Lee Pace. Oh my god, I love Lee Pace so much. And it had that hyper-realistic stylization to it, and it was just beautiful and ethereal, and everything about it was gorgeous.
It's a proper modern-day fairy tale, isn't it?
Yeah, it really was.
Like just everything about it seemed... Yeah.
And heartwarming. It was very affirmative. I liked it a lot. Yeah, I'm glad you made me watch that. We were looking through films and Phil was like, oh, The Shape of Water. And I've never seen that. And you were like, well, we're watching it now.
We stumbled across Cold Skin.
Yeah.
And we watched the trailer for it because I'd seen it already, and was showing you to see if you're interested.
Mm.
And you're like, it looks a bit like a love story. And I was like, love story involving fish men. Have I got a film for you? And then just kind of forced Shape of Water upon you.
I love stories about fishmen. They are my favourite fishmen love stories. But yeah, I'm really glad you foisted that film on me. And you paid good money for it as well.
Like $2.99.
$2.99 is good money.
It wasn't exactly bank breaking.
Well, la di da.
Did rent it though. Didn't buy it outright. I'm gonna get it on Blu-ray though. Yeah. That's definitely a Blu-ray purchase.
Okay. I'm down with that. I will allow space on the DVD shelf. Have you watched anything else recently?
I mean, I've watched a lot recently.
Have you watched anything Whether horror that is related anything recently? Worth,
I watched Cabin in the Woods, but I'm sure we've talked enough about that one.
Tell you what, they feel it's no Cabin in the Woods.
Screamers.
What Screamers?
We watched that.
Did we?
Yeah. You came in halfway through. It was about
the company who
found their own like
giggler.
Like a video hosting website, and they get sent this kind of screamer video, which, you know, the type of video that was popular in like the late 90s when people didn't quite know what the internet was about.
So they went jump scares, that's what it's
so
about.
You're watching this innocuous video and all of a sudden jump scare.
Scary spooky.
And they go investigating it and screams happen.
Yeah. I don't... Did I like that film? I don't think I liked that film.
No?
No, I think I'm really, really bad with jump scares. I am... not well, the kind of person who enjoys a jump scare. I feel like it's a very modern day, very lazy way of evoking a visceral reaction within people. And I think it's unnecessary and I don't like it. And I wish people would fucking stop.
I know what you mean. Like, I kind of have a love-hate relationship with them. Because, like you say, it's a purely physiological reaction. All it is a loud noise that activates your kind of fight-or-flight response.
Yeah. With a scary face.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Just something sudden happens and you're like, oh, fuck. Whereas kind of proper horror does warm your way under its skin a lot more.
Yeah, definitely.
But that said, some of the greatest films I've watched do utilise jump scares.
Do you know who do jump scares? Rephrase. Do you know what kind of films do jump scares really well?
What?
Tartan Asia Extreme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ring, Grudge, blah, blah, blah.
I know it was a remake, but The Ring was one of the greatest jump scares I've...
One of the greatest jump scares of all time!
Okay, maybe I should have rephrased that, but that was the film, one of the films I was thinking of.
Yeah. No, they do, yeah. Tartan Asia.
I think they have, like, jump scares on their own are cheap, but with a, like, A Tale of Two Sisters, when she's gradually reaching for the piece of jewellery.
Yeah.
And near the sink, and the hand comes out. Like, that's a jump scare.
Uh-huh.
But because the tension is built so slowly throughout the sort of preceding moments.
I did not like that bit. I'm so bad with them. They freak me the fuck out. It's not cool. Stop it. Ugh. Like, I like horror films that don't frighten me.
Okay.
That's why I watch, like, 80s B-movie and sci-fi horror. Like, it's never gonna happen. Whereas I could be legitimately reaching for a piece of jewellery under a sink and a hand might come out and grab me.
Yes, there's a perfectly valid caution to have.
It can happen.
If Phil, you insist.
Stop being mean. Sarah, come back.
Aww.
He's mean. Cool. just cool. Like, now that I've had my little tirade about how fucking awful I think jump scares are, like, have you got anything else? Was there a horror game you were playing recently, or have I
horror game?
Yeah. Or have I completely made that up?
Is that something that I'm
thinking of?
There's been a couple. I've been.
When was the last time you played Rush of Blood?
A while back, but I enjoy that. The Inpatient as well.
The Inpatient was a bit freaky, wasn't it?
Yeah. All by the same creators. Whose name escapes me?
Blah, blah, blah.
I want to say Supermassive Games.
Supermassive Black Hole Games.
Yep, by Muse. the same guys behind Until Dawn. Yeah, Supermassive Games.
Supermassive Game Hole.
They did Until Dawn in 2015, which I loved. Then produced a kind of sequel, but it wasn't really a direct sequel. It was more inspired by the events of. It turned out to be a VR rail shooter, which was super fun.
Was that Rush of Blood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also did
Terrifying.
The Inpatient, which is kind of a prequel to Until Dawn.
Yeah.
So they've kind of got this family of games, that two of which are VR. But yeah, I actually really enjoy them. Like, VR lends a whole new level of... Like, I'm not great with horror games as it is.
Yeah, like immersive, scary games.
Yeah, it's weird. I think you can kind of... It's why I always say it's like... What I always say.
It's like I always say, you can't use VR.
With horror films, you watch enough and you kind of... Not tell, but you can kind of read them.
It desensitizes you.
Yeah, you can kind of read. You can say, well, actually, you know, we've just had a jump scare, therefore there's gonna be a period of, like,
yeah,
story building and whatever.
Exposition, exposition, exposition.
Right, and then because there's every you know, a traditional story does have a a plotted arc of tension that is kind of steadily ratcheted up and then sort of falls at the conclusion.
Yeah.
And that's sort of basic filmmaking technique. But I think games work in a different way because they don't have... They're not quite as...
Because they just go, tension!
Basically.
All the way through.
Because there's less need to dictate where the tension is because... you know, as a game, you are automatically more on edge because
it's you controlling what happens.
Because you aren't, because it's less orchestrated. I mean, I say less; it is orchestrated. You know, kind of there are sort of moments that are planned out in the game, but as a player, you don't know how soon those things are going to happen. So as soon as you're dumped into a game, like for example, Amnesia. Or whatever, then from that moment on, anything could happen until you finish the game.
Yeah, it's just super tense all the time.
Yeah, whereas a film, like I said, you have these moments, you know, you get a jump scare and then it's like, oh, it's fine, nothing else is going to happen for a little while, and so on and so forth. And I think, like...
There's no relief, or any relief that you feel in a game is incredibly short-lived.
Yeah.
Like, I haven't played it, and actually I have no intention of playing it whatsoever. Because I have it on good authority that Resident Evil 7 is just whole levels of fucked up.
So I've been thinking about getting that.
Oh my god. I will watch you play it. I'm fine doing that. But there is no way in hell you will get me behind that controller.
That's fair. But yeah, like, VR gives a whole new level of immersion to that. Because not only are you controlling your character and... kind of having to force yourself through this game.
You can't look away.
It's also happening right in front of your eyes, as if you're directly in that game.
Yeah.
Ah.
As is the point of VR, yes.
Well, yeah.
But, yeah, you but can't look away. You can't get away from it.
It lends itself really well to VR because horror games lend themselves really well to VR because that immersion. Because it relies on the immersion. It relies on you being in the game and experiencing the tension that the game's trying to build.
I mean, the really stupid thing about what I just said was you can't get away from it. You literally can. You just take off the headset.
Mm-hmm. And chuck the game in the freezer.
Put the game in the freezer. Absolutely. That's what I'm going to do with Resident Evil 7. Just put it in the freezer. I got gifted a copy of Resident Evil 6. I have never touched it.
Is it in the freezer?
No, it's on my PC. Haven't touched it, don't intend to. I'm terrified of just looking at it. It's sitting there on my Steam account just going, hello, are you going to play me? No, not a chance. I'm quite happy to leave up to other people.
That's fair. Let's plays are always fun to watch.
Oh god, I would have to be very, very drunk.
And leaping back a little while.
Mm.
Fortitude is on Now TV.
Yay!
So watch it at your leisure.
Thanks for the permission.
So you can watch it at your leisure then.
Better. So I can watch it at my own leisure, IA. Okay, right. I reckon that that's us pretty much done, you know.
I think so.
We've talked about the things that we've seen. And we've discussed the film that we did a watch of.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah's not here to do, like, the eloquent in-between bits and broad knowledge that she has.
We just have to frantically hop on the internet and hope that we find...
Yeah, like...
hope we find the answer before we run out of words.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, weirdly, we did more planning for this podcast than we've done for any in ages. And, yet
and look
still,
where it got us.
Yeah, this is why we should always do things on the fly with extra alcohol. You can check us out. We are most likely to be around on Instagram. You can find us at GorePress. All three of us run the account, so you can ask us specific questions or you can ask for recommendations. If you have any points to put forward about what we've said in any of our podcasts, then go for it. In the same way, if you are listening to the podcast on your phone and you feel like sharing it to your stories and doing a bit of a share and getting our name out there, that'd be great. You can find us on Twitter at GorePress.
Mm-hmm. And at Radio Gore Press.
And at Radio Gore Press. We are also on Facebook. If you just search for Gore Press, we come up.
Yeah.
And
if you find yourself having watched The Similars, let us know what you think.
Oh, please do.
We would really love to hear what you think of
We would love that. Like, shoot us a message on Instagram or something. That's probably the best way to get in contact with us. But, yeah, I would absolutely love to know what other people think of that.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so cool.
Definitely.
Okay, so that's it from us. And have a good couple of weeks. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
See ya.
Bye.